This is Audible.
Audible.com and Harper Audio are pleased to present an interview with Gregory Maguire, author of several wonderful novels based on familiar fairy tales. The hugely successful Broadway show Wicked is based on Maguire's novel of the same name. Here, Gregory talks about his newest book, Son of a Witch, the sequel to Wicked.
This is Michael Conroy from Harper Audio, and we're here speaking with Gregory Maguire. It's been 10 years since Wicked was published. Have you been interested in telling Lear's story since then? What prompted you to return to these characters, and what was that experience like for you as a writer?
When I first went out on the road to promote Wicked 10 years ago, I had to have a punchline to end my readings with, and so I used to say, well, if I ever write a sequel, of course it's got to be called Son of a Witch. Ha ha ha, by the book. You know, that was my hook, and it was my way off the stage. But I never actually meant it. I didn't think there would be another book, and certainly not a book about Lear. But a number of things have happened in 10 years, not least of which is the phenomenal popularity of Wicked, which has surprised everybody, even the smart people at HarperCollins, I think. One thing that happened, of course, is that Wicked was first bought for a movie and then put onto the Broadway stage. This meant that an awful lot of people went to my book who weren't necessarily readers of novels. Because the play appeals to children, especially to girls, a lot of girls about the age of 12 and 14 have been reading Wicked, which was published and written for adults. Consequently, I've been getting fan letters for several years now from girls, not young women, but girls, saying, whatever happened to Noor? Now, if you read the book Wicked, you know Noor was a young child, about 12, who is last seen in chains under the wizard's, you would hardly call it protection, in his grasp, I suppose you'd say. The girls have followed the whole story, but they zero in on the one character who is their age at the end of the novel and who has not been saved. We adults know that in a hard world, many children are not saved, and Wicked is an adult novel about adult themes. But in the 10 years since I wrote Wicked, girl children have started to read it, and one other thing has happened. I have had a daughter of my own. I've adopted a girl from Guatemala, and I know someday she will read Wicked too, and she will also turn to me and say, whatever happened to Noor? How could you do that to her? Well, I didn't do it to her, the story did it to her, but I know what the question means. So Son of a Witch, in part, was propelled by the fan letters that required me to be able to answer the question for myself, whatever happened to Noor?
In other interviews, you've explained that you write as a way of thinking through ideas for yourself. So did the inspiration for Son of a Witch come about in the same way? And if it did, what ideas were you thinking about when you approached the novel?
Son of a Witch came about in a slightly different way than before. I think usually I write novels, however pretty and fun they are to read, and I hope they're both. I write novels about intellectual concepts and constructs. What is the relative value of beauty, for instance, or what is the cost of evolution? Son of a Witch came from someplace different. Son of a Witch came more from images than from an intellectual question that I was posing to myself. And one of the main images that prompted it was the images that flashed all across the internet and on the front pages of our newspapers when the photographs from Abu Ghraib prison after the United States Army and the Allies had taken over it were first published. The photographs of the torture is what I call it, and the hooded prisoners standing on boxes and the men being threatened with dogs on chains. Those photographs seemed so striking to me that in order to digest them and understand them myself, I needed to write a story in which there was a prison and there was some desperation, but also some escape. Let's face it, I'm an American citizen. I can vote. But I can't very well put myself on an airplane and go and rent a tractor and raise a prison outside of Baghdad. I can't do it. I don't know how to drive a tractor, among other things. But I can write a story about prisons and their hold on the imagination, especially in a time of, well, let's call it terror. Why not? Everybody else is.
This relates to another question I had, and that's the first epigraph in Son of a Witch is a quote from de Tocqueville, and the closing epigraph is a quote from Jefferson, both dealing in their way with democracy and democratic peoples. Why did you choose those two quotes specifically? Do they have significance to you outside the scope of the novel?
If they had significance to me outside of the scope of the novel, that would be an insufficient reason for them to be included in the novel. But in a way, I suppose I'm trying to see in the writing of fantasy what can still be examined in that literary form. That is to say, stop and think about the fantasies written for children or for adults and where they take place. They almost all take place in some sort of a medieval construct. What a friend of mine said was a kind of a fairy tale land sometime that was positioned sometime after the fall of Constantinople and before the invention of the internal combustion engine. There was royalty. There were kings and queens. There were knights and serfs. And nobody much questioned the nature of power or how it was used in fantasies. Maybe T.H. White did a little bit in The Once and Future King. But I wanted to write a fantasy world in which how people thought about the power that they had or the power that they didn't have in a social situation, in a political situation, was the main point. So yes, those two quotes were chosen to bracket this story, Son of a Witch. Because if Wicked was the tale of a woman finding her individual voice against an oppressive authority, then Son of a Witch is the tale of a man who realizes in order to make an impact, he has to belong to society. He cannot be a hermit.
The Jefferson quote has a finality to it when you read it at the end of the book, and it suggests, I think, that the story is finished. Do you have any plans to return to the characters or to Oz in your writing?
I won't be coy. I don't have any specific plans, but if I do, I have one or two scenes already lodged in my mind as a place where they can, as a place where a third novel might ultimately end. But I won't rush to do it, and if the urgent need to do it, to spend time in this difficult and somewhat ugly terrain, doesn't present itself to me, I won't punish myself by doing it. One of the interesting criticisms of Wicked by some readers and indeed a few reviewers was, oh my goodness, McGuire doesn't know how to plot a book. There were all these strands left hanging and everything was just cut off in the middle like he got tired of writing it and that was the end. We don't know what happened to anybody. Well, it may not have been an acceptable reading experience for them, but it was exactly what I intended at the end of Wicked. Wicked was a tragedy. The witch dies. One of the ways that we feel the tragedy of an early death is that we don't know how stories end. It's very different from somebody dying in their old age, looking back on their career, looking back on their children and grandchildren, and summing up. Somebody who dies in midlife leaves stories unfinished, leaves strings unknotted. And I intended that purposely to make the tragedy that much more poignant. Now, in Son of a Witch, there are going to be some elements of the plot that are, in fact, unresolved. But if you read carefully, you will at least know in what direction things are tending. And let's face it, in our own lives, that's all that we really can know. What direction are things tending to go? Not how will they be or what must they be, but where are they leaning? That's, I think, an honest way to end a novel. So whether there's a third or not, well, inspiration will have to decide that further down the track.
I'm sure that's very good news for the fans of the books. In a good portion of your other fiction that you've written for adult audiences, you're working within the broad boundaries of pre-existing tales. Could you compare those writing experiences with that of writing a novel like Son of a Witch, where the boundaries are more generally of your own making?
Yes. Well, I love to write stories such as Confessions of an Ugly Stepsister or Mirror, Mirror, which take as their basic architecture the shape of a story familiarly known by the common reader, the story of Cinderella, the story of Snow White. The shapes of those stories are so recognizable that, in fact, one finds that as story shapes, they are very capacious and forgiving. They can hold basically any idée fixe that I might have, whether it be about evolution or about beauty, and not be sullied. I'm not doing parodies of them. I'm just using their shapes as a way to hold the ideas that I have and the inquiries that I have at any given moment. However, as you say, Son of a Witch is not like that at all. It's even further removed from The Wizard of Oz than Wicked was. It's almost as if the Oz that I'm writing about now has spun off, and it's an alternative history. It might be an alternative universe, an Oz that's like but not exactly like the Oz that we knew when we were children, in the same way that the fiction of any realistic novelist that we might read, be it John Updike or Ann Beatty or Ann Tyler, is like but subtly unlike the world in which we live. They're alternative universes.
Well, in that same vein, I guess, you dedicated Son of a Witch to the cast and creative team of the musical theater version of Wicked. And so they took your Oz and imposed their creative vision on that. How was that for you as an author?
Well, it was a delightful experience. I sure hoped you were going to ask me to sing a few notes. So I have brought in a score in my backup, and my boom, chucka, boom, chucka, boom. So I'll be getting into that in just a moment. In fact, I was very able to be generous in loaning, bequeathing, maybe giving my story up for adoption, as it were, to the capable and sensitive people who put on the musical version of Wicked, partly because, after all, I had inherited part of the story myself, both from L. Frank Baum and from MGM. It seemed a little bit pompous or self-important, let's say, for me to say, well, the Wizard of Oz story was written in 1900 and first filmed in 1914 and then famously filled in 1937. And then in 1975, there was The Wiz on Broadway, and then there was the film. And then in 1995, I wrote Wicked, and their evolution has to stop. I mean, I'm just not that self-important. So it was easy to say, go on, let things be as they will, as long as you can convince me, you people making the play, that you know the main theme of Wicked and you honor it. I was convinced that the people who were doing the play did understand the main themes of my book when Stephen Schwartz, the composer and lyricist, and the person who had the idea that this might be a musical play, said to me, the curtain will open, here's the first thing that will happen, the witch will just have died, and everyone will be on stage singing, No One Mourns the Wicked. And I thought, well, he's got it. He said five words to me, No One Mourns the Wicked, and he is proving to me he knows what my novel was about. So I can deed it over, sign the contracts, and feel that my baby's in good hands, as indeed it was and is.
You also write extensively for younger audiences, chapter books, children's books, the Hamlet Chronicles series. Where do you get your inspiration for those books? Is the writing process the same, whether you're working on a novel or children's books, or does it differ depending on the intended reader?
I do write children's books and chapter books, although I'm doing a little bit less of it now. It seemed to me for a while, before Harry Potter bludgeoned its way onto the stage, and I mean that in the nicest possible way, and reminded teachers and librarians and children themselves that they actually could not only tolerate but thirst for a long, complicated, upholstered sort of novel. Up until that point, children's book editors had been asking for much more restraint, both in language and in the shape and size of books, and even, I think, in the aims and intentions that a novelist and an artist was trying for when he or she set out. I began to be a little bit tired of that. After 15 years, it seemed to me that my wings were being more and more clipped by my editors of children's books, and I was able to do less and less of anything that made me proud, satisfied me as a writer, and would satisfy me as a reader. That's one of the reasons I turned to Wicked, turned to writing for adults, back in 1992 or so when I finally put pen to paper with Wicked. I wanted a fuller freedom, let's say. Now, mercifully, and again, thanks to Harry Potter, I think a lot of editors are leaning back and saying, well, either children have been educated or we've just seen ourselves that these books can make pots and pots of money, so we're going to relax a little bit our strenuous attention to every scrupulous little detail of language that we think might be over the heads of some of our young readers, etc.
Well, so are you working on or planning a new book now? Do you switch back and forth in your head between adult novels and children's or chapter books and things like that?
As we sit here in the studio, I have two books on the desk at home. One of them is just about to be signed up by HarperCollins, I believe, and the working title as yet, the working title is not necessarily the finished title, so I won't mention it. But it is a book about, ostensibly about the tsunami, but more importantly, it's a book that helps children to ask the questions, why do things happen that can't be explained, including sorrow, danger, and loss. It's a shorter book. I think of it as my version of The Little Prince or something. It's attempted to be a philosophic exploration for people about the ages of 8 or 9 or 10. There's another longer novel, but that's for children, but that's a little bit further back on the desk, if you know what I mean.
You've read two of your books now for their audio versions, the children's story collection Leaping Beauty and now Son of a Witch. Is the process of recording your own work something that you are enjoying?
Oh, I love it. I'm not sure whether the people in the sound booth are enjoying it, but I'm having a great time. the difference in doing the children's story that I did last year and the children's stories and this adult novel, Son of a Witch, is that when I came into the booth last year to do the children's stories, I was familiar with reading them to children for several years already. I had read them aloud long before they got published, and I knew exactly my pacing and my voices. This book is much longer than all those stories put together, and it has many more characters and is much more serious. So it's requiring a lot more attention to consistency of voice and legitimacy of pacing, if you will.
Do you ever listen to audiobooks yourself? Is that something that you enjoy?
Well, I have... it is a new pleasure. Let me put it that way. I have recently, in the last couple of weeks even, listened to Plan B, the book by Annie Lamott, and I then listened to Garrison Keillor's Homegrown Democrat, I think possibly might be the name of it. And both of them afforded me a great deal of solace, as well as a good chuckle or two. I almost missed Exit 4 off the Mass Pike when I was listening to Garrison Keillor last week.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time out of the day today to talk to us. We really do appreciate that. And good luck with the
What, rest you're
of
not going to ask me to sing?
No, well, I have the music back in
okay,
my office
great.
As well, if you'd like
okay,
me to play
I'll
along.
Okay, I'll call you up on the phone later.
Okay.
Thanks
All
a
right,
lot.
Perfect.
My pleasure.
Okay, thank you.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
If Gregory Maguire has piqued your interest in Son of a Witch, you'll be glad to know you can download the audiobook today. You can also download Maguire's young adult collection, Leaping Beauty.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.